buckle up. Let's have some fun. Welcome to Coming in Clutch. This is the art of the shift. A little backstory, a little important things for you to know about me as we get started this morning. First and foremost, this is my beautiful family. That is my treasure, my beautiful wife, Erica, my two sons, Mark Anthony, and my youngest, Mateo Andres. Me and Mateo share a birthday, which is pretty cool. But I can tell you that in our journey, we have had to navigate significant transitions like many of you all have. I will ask for grace and that I would say preface, I want to offer this preface in that I say filter everything that I'm going to say today through the lens of Paul's words when he said, not that I've obtained it yet, but one thing I do, forgetting what is behind me, I press onward. Why do I say that? Because while I have learned some things that I wish to share with you today, things that I believe are of value, I have by no means perfected these things. But one thing I could tell you is how we navigate shifts, how we navigate transitions will always impact this.
Yeah.
It will always impact this.
That's good.
And the times in which I have gotten it wrong and I have found my car stalled, the people who have been impacted most have been the people that I love the most.
Wow.
And so as we talk about this today, I want to share this with a level of vulnerability today, not to come up as somebody who has it all together by any stretch of the imagination, but rather just to share with you that this is what is at stake. We all represent families in here. And oftentimes we focus on ministry and oftentimes we focus on our profession, but the one thing that I believe wholeheartedly is how we navigate transitions, shifts, changes of seasons, if we do it with our families in mind, everything else will figure itself out. So today, I want to let you know a little bit more about myself. How did I end up here? So my wife, Erica, and I were lead pastors of Van Ness in the Bronx. My predecessor, some of you perhaps know, David Hernquist, served for 32 years. Erica and I landed, and when I say landed, it was because we were missionaries previously. We served in Spain for about 3.5 years. We landed back in New York a week after I had emergency surgery. I literally left a piece of myself in Spain, not figuratively, literally. I had my gallbladder removed, and a week later, we landed back in New York. 2 weeks after that, we got voted in. We were one of 8 candidates to succeed Pastor David Hernquist. Wow. For whatever reason, I guess they decided Erica and I were the right fit. But we got voted in, going into a legacy church that has 90-plus years of history in the community, in the middle of a construction project. Oh, by the way, did I say I got 2 toddler boys?
Yeah.
So people ask me, what was the transition like? I was like, it's like jumping out of a plane without a parachute, landing on a moving train while drinking from a fire hose. Buckle up, we're going for a ride. But even to that, you might look at me and say, well, how did you end up here? How did you get there? And one thing that I will tell you is that is critical and key to transitions is timing. It's timing.
Yeah.
And one thing that you need to understand is that we didn't just end up at Van Ness. We didn't just end up at the Bronx. We didn't just end up pastoring. To be quite honest, I never wanted to pastor. Some of you in the room who are not pastors, be careful what you say you never want to do. I never wanted to pastor. It was nothing that I ever aspired to. Previously, as I mentioned, Eric and I served as missionaries in Spain for 3.5 years. We were Convoy of Hope. Prior to that, we served as missionaries in Cuba, but prior to that, I worked in Midtown Manhattan for a fashion footwear industry, and I was in that world for 7 years, and at the same time, very involved in my church and everything else. From my childhood, I was born in East Harlem, so that's where you saw in the first picture there. I grew up in public housing, first generation American, son of immigrants, my father from Cuba, mother from Puerto Rico, right? I went to, in 12 years of school, I went to 11 different schools. I didn't get kicked out of one of them. Stop judging me. You're like, oh, that kid's a problem, you know? I learned what it was to be the new kid on the block. People don't believe me when I tell them this, but I am an introvert. All of you thinking I'm a liar right now. I learned to become extroverted because I learned to adapt to my surroundings and my circumstances. I drove up this morning from the Bronx in silence because I knew I was going to be around a lot of noise today. When I drive back this afternoon, I will drive in silence because we're having a good time talking and hearing each other out this afternoon. I learned what it was to navigate these different seasons. And so today I want to share with you just four key principles that I believe if you meditate on them, if you pray on them, can be things that you can always come back to in moments of shift, transition, and different seasons of life. Jesus oftentimes taught in parables, so I want to use as a visual driving a manual car, a stick car. Who here drove today? Raise your hand if you drove today, all right? Keep your hand up if you drive a manual car or you know how to drive a manual car. Okay, quite a few of you, all right? So you're all going to appreciate what I'm going to share today. But for those of you who do not drive, don't feel left out. Don't worry. You've been in a car or seen a car. You're going to appreciate and understand what I'm going to share. I have to confess something. I love movies, okay, and grew up watching a lot of movies. And when I was in high school, there was a popular series of movies that they have continued, that they need to discontinue, like Give It a Break, for crying out loud. But Fast and the Furious. Who here has seen Fast and the Furious? It's like, how many ways can you save the world with fast cars? I do not know. But I watched Fast and the Furious, and at the time, I was living in Northern Virginia. My father worked in D.C., and so we had left New York, and we were out there. And in Virginia, they are crazy enough to give 15-year-olds driver's licenses. Wow. And I was crazy enough at 15 years old to get my driver's license. And so I learned on an automatic car, and I was driving, and I love to drive. I love going on road trips. A couple of weeks ago, my family and I, we just had to get out. We got hit with the blizzard that hit New York. And then that night when the streets were clear, we drove all the way down to Miami. Yeah, we're a little like that sometimes. I love to drive. But I was watching these movies, right? And so then I had a friend who was silly enough to lend me the keys to the Audi TT, and it was a manual. So I thought I was Vin Diesel. So I get in that car. I've never driven a stick before in my life. Why did they give me the keys? I don't know. But the thing is that if you try to go too fast, you find yourself furious. I think that's where they got the name of the movie from. If you try to go too fast, you find yourself furious. I burnt out the clutch on the car. I found myself stuck on the side of the road, literally with my hazards on, saying, how do I get out of this mess? I didn't learn the timing. All right, so for those of you real quick, you understand this is what it is, right? You have to engage the clutch first and foremost to turn on the car, okay? All right, that's number one. And then put it in first gear. And then you have to master that trick where you learn how to de-clutch at the same time as you apply gas. Everybody with me, right? You know this? Okay? It's all about timing. But I learned something when I was living in Spain, because we had to rent a lot of cars for my travel with Convoy of Hope. And so the same as your brake pads on your car, right? And I got a mechanic right here. He's voideering everything that I'm saying, okay? So we have quality control. As the same ways that you have brake pads on your car, and if you drive somebody else's car, maybe you drive a newer car, their brakes might be a little bit more sensitive. The clutch is the same. Every clutch on every car wears according to the driver's use of it. So each clutch is going to catch differently. Pay attention, because I'm using a lot of figurative language, but I want you to follow where I'm going here. Each clutch catches differently. And so one thing that I remember seeing was, I had a vecino, I had a neighbor when we were living in Spain. His name was Antonio. He walked around with a cane, he had a knee replacement, and he was waiting for his hip replacement. The guy had been to the body shop a few times. And he had a hard time with stairs and a hard time walking, but I remember having this aha moment one day when I see him driving out of the garage. And I look at Antonio, nicest man in the world. Him and his wife, Remy, were amazing to my wife and I. We lived on the 7th floor of the same building. And he's pulling out of the garage of that building. And I look at Antonio, and I have, clear as day, this revelation. He's not Vin Diesel. Yet he's driving a manual car. The brother could barely handle stairs. How in the world is he doing all the pedal action? And that's when it clicked. Timing has so much more to do with technique than it has to do with speed.
Wow.
The timing of things. So I started this practice whenever I would rent a car from the airport, whenever I had to travel to work. And if you've driven stick, you know what I'm talking about, and maybe you've learned this practice. But this is what I want us to land on, this point of timing. Put the clutch all the way in. You start the car. You put it in first. And then you do nothing. You just don't even turn on the music. Mm-hmm. Don't adjust your Bluetooth. Don't even adjust your mirrors. You just feel that clutch.
Yep.
Where is it? You slowly lift up. You hear the car start to kink. You just push it back in. right? Everybody know that kank kank noise, right? For those of you who don't, that means that your car is about to stall. Because that's the trick with the clutch. You let go of it too fast, your car will stall. But if you keep the clutch engaged and you give too much gas, guess what happens? You make too much noise. Start revving that engine. So before you even touch the gas, what do? You just find what I like to call that biting point. Where does it engage? And do you know that even in a manual car, if you find that biting point and you just find it right there and it engages, your car will start to move, even without you applying gas.
Right.
Do you know this? Right? Some of you do.
Yeah.
Same is true in ministry. Same is true in life. What happens a lot of times, and I'm guilty of this, I have stalled many vehicles. I have found myself stuck on the side of the road plenty of times. Because you don't find that clutch and you're trying to give too much gas, you think of Vin Diesel and you're trying to do a little bit too much. And so you find yourself either revving the engine too much or not engaging enough where it just completely stalls. It stops before it even starts. The biting point. Erica and I have been at Van Ness for 2 years now, and at the first several months, and even still now, it's finding the biting point with the congregation. What is the level of engagement? See, too many times as leaders, we want to give gas. We want to go. But if you give gas before people have bought in, before people have bitten into what it is that you want to do, what's going to ensue? A lot of noise. In your marriages, what's going to happen if you want to make a move and you do something before your family has completely bitten in, they're fully engaged with what it is? You rev the engine. Allegorically, that's called a marital argument. I see a few couples. Don't nudge your spouse too hard. Right, there's a lot of noise because one wants to give gas and the other one hasn't even bitten in. They're not engaged with the transition yet. And I'm speaking from personal experience. Not that my wife raises her voice at me because she's a saint. But I just say that to say that there are times where we just have unnecessary tension because those things that we're supposed to take timing and get engagement, we rush. What is the biting point? Whatever transition it is that you feel that you are navigating, that you're trying to get through, what is that biting point? What is that point of engagement? Find it and rest there. Rest there. Because as you get that engagement, and that engagement is secure, the engagement is so strong that it will move your car without you even having to put the foot on the gas. Timing. Every gear, shifting gears a little bit here, every gear has its purpose. We need to understand the purpose and intention of the moment. Quite a few people have raised their hands that they know how to drive stick. We've all done it. You start your car in second gear. Who here has done it? Tell the truth. Right? Mechanics will advise, and otherwise, that, you know, I've heard so many people, I don't even know why you have first gear. It's kind of pointless. Everybody, you know, so many people say this. Yet the reality of it is that while you can start your car in second gear, it requires a greater level of engagement because where the clutch is going to catch is at a different point. Not only that, in order to get the car to move, you need more gas. Kind of defeats the whole fuel efficient, you know, thing that manual cars boast themselves about. So while you can start in second gear, over time, perpetually starting your car in second gear, you're gonna have to come and visit my buddy Eric over here because you're gonna do something to your transmission, right? Same is true in life. Same is true in ministry. Same is true in our marriage. If we are constantly trying to start, we're on to the next thing, and we're trying to start in second gear, and we're totally skipping first gear, we don't need first gear. You know, we don't gotta talk with the board. We're just gonna move forward. I don't got to consult with my wife. We're just going to move forward. We don't got to ask the kids how they feel about moving halfway around the world. He's 18 months. He's 9 months. They're not going to know the difference. Right? My four-year-old boy still tells me today that he misses Malaga. He left when he was 2. And my nine-month-old misses it because his brother misses it. Right? These transitions that we could just so quickly skip first gear. We could skip the fundamentals. But each gear, each moment has its purpose.
Yes.
It has its purpose. And so when we try to, in these seasons or moments of shifts and transitions, we totally just, I'm going to bypass first gear. I'm going to just go in second. Realize what you're asking of yourself. You need a greater level of engagement, and you're going to need to apply a lot more gas. So you have to look at yourself. Do I have that level of engagement? Is everybody on the team, have they bitten in to that point? Mind you, not only do you need engagement, you need more engagement. So if first gear requires 2, 3, 4, 5 people to get something going, in second gear, it's going to require 10, 15, 20. Have they all bitten in? And do we have the horsepower do we need? Do we have the gas available in the tank to actually cause us to accelerate so that we can move in second gear? Realize while you can do it, perhaps it's not the most effective way to do it. Why rush to second gear when you can start in first? So many times the things about transitions that become burdensome are the unnecessary taxes that we put on ourselves because we're just trying to get through it, get to the next thing. So every gear has its purpose. What are the first gear things that we think are indispensable? So many times, maybe it's even your devotional time.
That's right.
I went to seminary. I don't got to read the board this morning. Written it on the tablet of my heart so that I will not sin against him. All right? I could quote scripture, you know, till the cows come home. I'm not going to read the Bible this morning. I'm going to go on to the next thing. What is the second gear that you just find yourself tempted to constantly go to? Because here's the kicker. We can easily lie to ourselves that first gear is not necessary. But then when you find yourself in a moment that you absolutely, no questions asked, need first gear, you're going to have a hard time driving in it. Why? Because you never got accustomed to it. So when you find yourself on that steep hill, the second gear is not going to work. When you find yourself in that spot where it's like, man, I need first gear right now, you're going to have a really challenging time. Why? Because you never got acquainted.
Wow.
You never got familiar with first gear. So here's the moral. Don't skip first gear. Keep first things first. Stay engaged with those things. You know what? Nobody likes first gear. First gear makes you go slow. But first gear is what has the most power. First gear is the one that has the most power. So when we slow down to do those first gear things, it sets us up for every gear, purpose, and intention that comes thereafter. The incline start. If you were to get your driver's license in Europe, in Spain, this is part of your road test. People fear this. People fail getting their driver's license because of the incline start. It's like having a parallel park in the city. People's like, I could drive, but can you park for me? It's like, how do you live in the city, but you don't know how to park? Like, I just don't get it. I had a sister from the church, when it snowed, she was like, can you shovel out my driveway? I was like, sure. I shoveled out a path so she could pull from it out. She was like, no, the whole thing, because I don't know how to drive in reverse. I was like, you mean to tell me you drive in and do a whole loop? I said, my sister, I love you, but there's 6 feet of snow outside. Today's a new day for you to learn, all right? You're never too late to learn how to drive in reverse, because I don't got it in me to shovel out your entire driveway so you could do a round-the-world loop and turn your car around. The incline starts. So we find ourselves in those moments, right? And this happened to me on the highway, right? Driving in Spain, you know, we lived on the Mediterranean. Calling of the Lord is beautiful sometimes. Sometimes God takes you to some beautiful places. Living in the Mediterranean was amazing. Now the Lord has us on the Bronx Riviera, which is also amazing.
Not quite the same.
You know, but I remember one time we went to Dublin. And I'll be honest, my affinity towards driving manual cars in Europe was because I'm too cheap to pay for an automatic. In Europe, they have automatics, but it's like 5 times the amount. I'm like, I'm going to save that money. I'm going to drive stick. So when I was in Dublin for St. Patrick's Day, Eric and I, the only sober people in the city, the pedals are in the same direction, but now I'm shifting with my left hand, driving from the other side of the car, the other side of the road. I deserve honorary Irish citizenship for the feat that I accomplished. And then the GPS takes you on these just narrow, windy roads where it's like literally cliff and like stone wall and then sheep just driving right in front of you. And so you hit these curves on an incline that it's like, I gotta come to a screeching stop, not because there's a light, but because there's literally sheep. I still own a pair of wool socks that I bought on that trip in honor of all those sheep that I did not hit. But literally, you're just driving and you don't know what comes before you, and you have to come to a screeching stop. I mean, just pull up the e-brake. Otherwise, you're going to have a new sheep bumper on the rental car that you're driving in. Those unforeseen things that just cause you to stop dead in your tracks, come to a screeching halt. Maybe it's that phone call, the medical diagnosis. Maybe it's the call from the bank. These obstacles that God knows, because he's sovereign. Alpha and Omega, he never changes. He knows the beginning from the end. He sees it coming, but we don't. And we're just cruising. And we're enjoying it. The window's down. We're having a good time. You know, hey, you're in Ireland. Hey, you're in Greece. You know, you're in Israel. Remember driving up the Swiss Alps. You know that there is a 17-kilometer long tunnel on the Swiss Alps? And it's just a straight shot up. And I'm like, Lord, help me. They better not stop. They better not stop. We're just going to keep it going. I promise you, they crop dust with Ricola on the Swiss Alps. Freshest air you'll ever inhale in your life. And I remember the whole time driving, I was just like, as long as we just keep going, we're going to be okay. But if I have to come to a stop on this tunnel, I was like, Lord Jesus. And then my son, you know, he was months old, just starts spazzing out in the back. So now you got him crying, right? And we're literally like in the tunnel. There's nowhere to pull over. And guess what happened? You had to stop. Something happened. I couldn't even see because the tunnel was so long. Something happened, so we had to stop. And my heart just starts palpitating. Because now I got a whole chain of cars behind me. It is a 17-kilometer just straight shot up. And we are in a tunnel. And I'm like, how in the world did I get myself in this mess? Who thought it was a good idea to drive from Milano, Italy, all the way to Germany? Whose idea was that? It was my idea, by the way. In those moments, as we pull up that e-brake, it's the things that you can rest in that sustain you.
Yeah.
Those things that make you immovable until you are ready to move.
That's a good word.
And if you don't know what your e-brake is in your car, I remember my mother-in-law, I love her to pieces. She's amazing, 5 foot, just powerhouse of a woman. And I remember when I first met Erica, I would get in her car and she would ask me to move it because she's one of those beloved people that don't like parallel parking. And so she's 5 feet, I'm 6'2" if you can't tell. And so I would have to climb into her car looking like it's a circus act. And so then I would try to have to like shimmy to get in there and then like scoop the seat back. And she worked out of her car literally as a chaplain for Cardone at the time. So she had filing paperwork on the passenger seat. I mean, all this stuff. And I'm like, how do you fit in here? She's like, I'm tiny. I'm like, how do you expect me to fit in here? And I remember having to move her car and I'm like, where's your emergency brake? She's like, oh, I don't use that thing. I was like, what? It was literally covered in files. I was like, God forbid, if you're on the highway and your brake goes out, you're gonna be like, hold on a second. How does that work? It's those anchors, those things that sustain us. And if you don't know where they are, when you need them, those things that allow you to be immovable. Christ Jesus is an anchor for our soul. He's an anchor for our soul. And then, of course, there's that timing component, you know. When you do have to do an incline start, now it gets fun, you know. Foot on the clutch, you still got to find where it bites. But even in that, we're always rushing. I'm always rushing. You know, one of my sons, I do run physically, you know. I train and what have you. But I always just use that expression. Oh, I gotta run. And my sons think like I am like a world triathlon athlete because they're like, you're gonna go run, Papi? I'm like, no, I'm actually gonna walk today. But you know, I just use that expression so much. I'm always rushing. I'm always, you know. But can I tell you, while we cannot slow down time, we can use time to slow down.
Yes.
And when you're on that incline stop, the thing that we feel is that rush, that impulse to keep going. But you know, that even with the e-brake up, you have the confidence this car is immovable. It's not going anywhere. Doesn't matter who's honking behind you. You can still take your time to move when you are ready. And in fact, not rushing the process is to your benefit, because if you do rush it, what can happen? It can roll backwards. And in that, cause irreparable damage to yourself and those around you. thoughts, those anchors, and engage with them. And don't rush the process of engaging with the anchor so that when it is time for you to move forward,
you're ready.
This is for my top level leaders, but true for all of us. Downshifting. One of the things I love about driving stick, you don't have to use the brake. You do have to use the brake, but you know. Driving, nice coastal road, PCH in California is beautiful. You know, when they see from sea to shining sea, I'm a New York City boy, born and bred. But shining sea is the West Coast. I just hope you know that, okay? All right, from sea to shining sea, we are sea. Yeah. West Coast is shining sea, all right? Just for some geography for you. PCH, Pacific Coast Highway down California, one of the most beautiful drives you'll ever get to do, right? You're on a road like that, just beautiful and everything else. And you're driving your car and you're coming down and guess what? You can use the engine to be able to decelerate without even having to apply the brake, right? If you know how to drive stick, it's true. The gears, right? Let's say you're in sixth gear. You're in the highest gear that you can go if you have a sixth gear car. The ones that are closest to it, if you know how to engage your clutch, you can open up the fifth gear and go back down into fifth gear and allow your car to do a mechanical slowdown without applying the brake. It's called downshifting. Why is this important for us as leaders? Because the momentum of what God is doing in your ministry, in your life, and in your work, and in your church, if it depends on you, when you have to come to a screeching stop, it will come to a screeching stop. When you have to apply the brake, everything else will come to a stop. But if you have those mechanisms and systems around you that you can offload on, the car can keep momentum even when you need to slow down. Mm-hmm. It's having those fifth gear people to say, hey, let me pass this off to you. It's having those fourth gear people, the fifth gear people can pass those things off to. So on and so forth. Eric, what would happen if I went from sixth gear to first? Yeah, exactly, right? There are certain people that we can't offload on, that we should never offload on. The way that the gears in an engine are structured is that by proximity, they can carry your weight. Aaron and Hur could lift up the hands of Moses. Why? Because they were close in proximity. They could help carry his weight. Not everyone is meant to carry your weight.
That's right.
Not everyone should have that proximity to you. But in times of seasons of transitions and shifts, those people need to be close by. Because those need to be the people that we can offload on. Because whatever vehicle God has you driving and you're calling this life and this season, it doesn't depend on you. And if everything comes to a stop because you need to put your foot on the brake, you need to ask God, who are the people that I can offload on, that I can delegate to? If we do these things, I believe that in the life seasons, as we transition, as we shift, we have some principles of things that we can look at. Learn how to engage the clutch. Take time, find that biting point. What is the point of engagement? What is the point of interest? Every gear has its purpose. Every season has its purpose. Don't rush in seasons of transition. Understand that on top of that, there are the need for anchors for us, things that can hold us dear, so that even when things do come to a screeching stop because of extenuating circumstances, we know that we can find rest and be sustained by Christ. And as we do, as we build teams, as we lead, find those whom we can lean on and offload on. On the last page, you'll find some resources that you might think a little bit peculiar, but it's just who I am. One thing I will tell you about change, nobody likes it. Nobody likes change. Not even homeless people who are getting coins like change. They want you to give them dollar bills. Nobody likes change. So if you can't tell, I have a sense of humor. Laughter is medicine to the soul. So as you're in seasons of change and transitions, I listed some Christian comedians who I find hilarious so that you can break the ice at home, have a good laugh, because sometimes we need to decompress so that we can de-stress, all right? And then I also offered you some people that I follow online as well as resources, because one of the things that I find important is the voices that we're listening to in times of transition, having people who look at things from a different perspective. So there's some apologists on there that I think will help us to engage in different seasons of transitions from a unique way. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been Coming in Clutch, The Art of the Shift. My contacts here, if you would wish to stay in touch, you can scan the QR code if you'd like it digitally. But thank you so much for being present and attending today. God bless you.